made his choice. The undead incursion will be gone within a few days. Chapter 66 Love's Bond. Zack didn't immediately leave the mansion, but rather gave some of his best healing pills to Thea. He was about to leave her room to visit Billy as well, and Thea surprisingly jumped down from her bed to join him. The giant was even worse off than Thea, from what she said. He had taken the brunt of the attacks after changing into a massive form to sink the ship, and this time Zack hadn't been there to block out the attacks with nature's barrier, like during the hunt. Billy had been badly burned by the flames of the cultists, it seemed. It was easy to figure out what room the giant resided in, as the whole room shook from the massive snores from within. But they stopped when Zack walked into the room.
"You're back,"
Billy rumbled as he woke up.
"Help Billy a bit. A stupid, horny guy keeps tricking Billy, making him forget how to leave this place. All horny people seem tricky. Could use a good thwonkin'."
"Don't let your fans hear that," Thea snorted from the side as she walked inside as well, prompting Zack to look over with confusion. "He has over 30 suitors among the demons on this island," Thea said with some bemusement. "It's a bit surreal."
"Of course it is super real. Billy is the most dashing prince. Mama always said so."
Billy nodded with a complacent expression.
"But Billy doesn't like horny girls."
You should just call them demons," Zack coughed, the anger in his gut somewhat dispersed by the giant's antics. He couldn't stay for too long, and he had to leave after making sure Thea and Billy had everything they needed.
"I'm sorry about how things turned out. I underestimated the undead empire and put too much trust in the words of Void's disciple. I was sure I had a few more weeks."
Zack apologized again just as he was about to exit.
"It's our fault as well," Thea sighed as she sat down next to Billy. "We didn't adapt quickly enough to this new reality, forcing the whole burden onto your shoulders. We played politics and fought for benefits when we should have been fighting for our lives and our futures."
Zack sighed as well, not knowing how to respond, and he left the mansion in silence.
"You really are evolving," a voice said from the side, and Zack looked over to see Agras standing there.
"I am," Zack nodded before he wryly smiled. "Did you know that Billy is pretty popular among the female demons?"
"Well, it makes sense. He's even bulkier than the abyssal demons, and rumors are circulating on the island that he has some powerful bloodline that increased his strength even further."
The demon shrugged.
"Between his constitution and his potential, he's one of the best bachelors on this world, perhaps even better than you, since you're a mortal."
Zack only shook his head in bemusement before he got back to the matter at hand.
"I need to take down the undead incursion quickly. Do you think I can do it without evolving?"
Zack asked as the two walked toward his private section.
"It's hard to say," the demon said after a while. "Normally, I would have said yes, but we're running out of time. The Lich King seems adept at arrays, judging by what we have seen so far, and he has no doubt turned the core zone into a fortress over the past year. He doesn't even need to maintain the shield for that long. Just a few days will do, and he will have won."
"You really think his arrays are that strong?"
Zack asked skeptically.
"I even managed to break the arrays in the base town."
"That's different. Those were mobile arrays, powered by F-grade warriors,"
Agras said with a shake of his head.
"The undead array will have hundreds, perhaps thousands, of unholy beacons powering it. He might even sacrifice tens of millions of zombies to give the defenses a boost until the realignment is complete."
"Still," Zack muttered, but he knew the demon had a point.
Sieges can take years, decades even, to slowly grind down the defensive arrays. And that's with proper equipment we don't have. You need to be a lot stronger to crack them in an instant, the demon said. The normal method would have been for us to bring millions of fodder to blast attacks on the shield to weaken it before we made our move. But there's no time for that, either.
Zack slowly nodded. He had somewhat hoped for the demon to convince him otherwise, but it truly looked like he needed to get a few power-ups to increase his certainty of success. He wasn't willing to bet Earth's future that he was able to break through the defensive perimeters and destroy the realignment array within 1 week without evolving.
"Where's my sister?" Zack asked. "Has she installed the array?"
"She's still trying to figure out the thing," Agra said. "But you need to slow down."
"What? You know we're running out of time," Zack said.
"Just a few hours have passed since you exited the tower. You have fought half the sector's geniuses and then fended off an invasion. You even turned Alea into a heaven-cursed necklace. You're not stable at the moment. You can't evolve in your current state," the demon said. "Honestly, if you were the scion of some clan, you would probably have been forced into silent meditation for at least a year to regain a sense of tranquility and balance."
"So you just want me to sit around?" Zack said with disbelief. "The planet is dying as we speak."
"We are all dying," the demon snorted. "Don't ruin everything now by rushing into things. Sit down and heal up and calm your mind, at least. A few hours spent now will save you a lot of time in the long run."
Zack was somewhat unwilling, but he knew that the demon was right. He wasn't in his right mind at the moment, and he needed to cool off. But he still felt like a child who got sent to take his nap as he walked back to his courtyard and sat down. His thoughts were a whir as he tried to calm down, and his mind kept jumping between the various things that needed his attention, each more urgent than the last. But slowly circulating the fragment of the Bodhi helped him relax his tense muscles, and his thoughts slowly followed. Visiting the Tower of Eternity was supposed to give him a breather to decompress, but things had gone increasingly out of hand with the splinter and then the time crunch to complete the climb. He felt more wound up than ever, especially after what he'd gone through with Alea. It was a mind-warping experience to be blasted by someone else's memories and emotions like that, and Zack could still barely discern what was he and what was Alea. His eyes slowly opened, and he looked down at the black 5-centimeter casket hanging on its chain around his neck. He still didn't know whether he had done the right thing or not. What if he had completely damned Alea by turning her into something like the sword slave he had snatched from the Swordmaster? The voices that had invaded his mind while using the thing had sounded beyond wretched. The one solace in his mind was that the system had said that the Divine Investiture Array was a rectification of regret. If Alea had died in front of his eyes like that, then he would have regretted it forever. To be just too late to save her, not just once, but twice, would have been too much to take. The system was essentially omniscient, and perhaps it had already known that things would end up like this. It did make him a bit pissed off that the system didn't provide a better solution to save her, but he guessed the system was more interested in making him stronger than it was in saving the poison mistress. However, his actions had no doubt caused some complications to his plans. A lot of his materials had gone into the Divine Investiture Array in his frenzied attempts to save the demoness. It also meant he no longer had any way to upgrade his axe, except letting it slowly eat various treasures. Of course, most items meant for Varun had gone to Alea, but he at least had the Dragon Core still. The real question was what sort of item he had created. He had initially just been focused on saving Alea's soul, but the array was meant to create a perfect spirit tool. This became doubly important, as Everlasting had been thrown into the mix, leaving him without anything to activate half of his skills. It might even affect his coming class choices, for all he knew, so he needed to understand what he was dealing with. He tried sending his mind into the coffin to see if he could glean anything, but it was impossible. Zack suddenly had an idea and released a drop of blood onto the necklace, which was immediately swallowed. A stream of information entered his mind the next moment, and Zack felt the same sort of connection as he did to his robes and Varun's bite. He felt a sense of sourness when he realized that either Alea or the system had named the chain-covered coffin Love's Bond. There was still no active response from the demoness, even after having bound the treasure with his blood. The coffin was still in a passive state, like his robes, where he could use it, but he couldn't sense any spirit tool's sapience. This was the norm for an E-grade spirit tool, though, with the tool awakening spirituality usually happening at higher grades, if ever. However, the stream of information had broadened his insight of what a spirit tool could do, and a mental command made two chains rush out from the holes on the side of the coffin and latch on to his left arm as the coffin rapidly grew in size. It took just a fraction of a second before the coffin had almost become as tall as Zack himself, while keeping the width of a normal coffin. But it was a lot thinner compared to what should be expected, with a depth of just 15 centimeters. It had actually turned into a shield. However, that was just one of its functions, and another mental command prompted the chains to snake around his torso as the coffin moved toward his back. It grew a lot shorter as well, making it almost resemble a coffin for a child, or perhaps a gnome. Four more chains reached out from their respective holes, each of them dancing in the air, as though Zack were a snake charmer. He was already used to this kind of fighting from the chains and profane seal, and commanding them was almost as natural as moving his own limbs. The chains shot out in an instant, and four trees in his courtyard had holes punched through with such force that they barely shuddered from the impact. The chains didn't have the life-sucking ability of the spectral chains, but there seemed to be some inherently corrosive effect attached to them, perhaps an addition provided by the mysterious fossilized bug he had thrown into the mix. It wasn't immediately noticeable, but the holes in the trees started to wither after a few seconds as well, like they were being assaulted by some sort of invasive rot. Furthermore, the chains were actual corporeal links made from top-tier materials like Neprosium, compared to the far more fragile fractal chains that his skill conjured. There was no way that a casual swing of an E-grade warrior would be able to break them apart, as they could do with the spectral copies. That meant that the chains were essentially a combination or fusion of hardness and rot, which made them a perfect fit for using together with the fragment of the coffin. However, Zack didn't take the time to experiment with all the possibilities of the chains at the moment, so he retracted them back into the coffin. He was extremely relieved that there was a second form of Alea's new form, since he was somewhat leery about using the coffin in its shield state. What if he encountered some powerhouse who managed to break it? What effect would it have on his chances of restoring her to her demon form? The chains themselves looked like his Neprosium shield, but slightly darker, so they wouldn't break so easily. Besides, Neprosium had excellent healing capabilities, even if that happened. The chains would probably just reform if the links broke, as long as he retrieved the material. It still felt weird to consider using Alea as a spirit tool, but he also knew that was what she'd wished for. At least he prayed that was what the spiritual connection had implied. She wanted to accompany him in his journey, and leaving her in a corner of his spatial ring felt even worse than using the treasure. He would need some time to think of the pitch-black coffin as Love's Bond rather than Alea, but he would make the best of the situation. Besides, that might be his best shot at actually getting the poison mistress back. Zack had asked about spirit tool upgrades while talking to Cathaya since they had broached the subject when discussing the Divine Investiture Array. Much of what she said hadn't been anything new, but one thing had stuck out. Using the same weapon a lot and for a long time gradually formed a bond that was helpful in all kinds of ways. It would allow a warrior to squeeze out more potential during a battle, and it would even help with upgrading the spirit tool. That was why most elites wanted a powerful weapon that could follow them during their whole cultivation path, rather than repeatedly swapping out their weapon for a stronger one. Nurturing this bond was the same as nurturing the spirit tool, so using the coffin in battle might actually be the best method to heal her soul, odd as it might sound. A chain snaked around his throat as the coffin shrank again, and it soon enough had returned to its passive state. Zack finally tried imbuing the spirit tool with his three fragments, but he found that the coffin, unsurprisingly, resisted the fragment of the axe. Imbuing it with the fragment of the Bodhi worked, but he couldn't sense any direct effect when doing so. But when he tried imbuing the skill with the final fragment, he was shocked. The surprise didn't come from the fact that the defensive fragment entered the spirit tool effortlessly. After all, if the Tao of the coffin didn't fit this spirit tool, then nothing would. The surprise came from something else. The fragment of the coffin had evolved. Chapter 67. Against the Natural Order. Zack quickly opened up his Tao screen, and as expected, there was a change. Fragment of the coffin, middle. All attributes, +20, endurance, +190, vitality, +120, intelligence, +35, wisdom, +65, effectiveness of endurance, +10%. Zack still didn't know when the upgrade took place, but he guessed that it mainly came from creating a coffin-type spirit tool. He had sat as though he was in a trance, witnessing the whole process, and something about the experience had helped him break through. Of course, more things had contributed to the upgrade. He had taken the first step toward upgrading the fragment from witnessing the Tao apparition of the War Steel, and he had fought both in the life-and-death battle against half the base town, followed by the battle against the cultists. These battles had set the foundations for the evolution, and the magical activation of the Divine Investiture Array was probably the final spark that upgraded the fragment. However, these things were just the latest additions. Alea had been the spark of inspiration for the formation of the fragment of the coffin since the very beginning. The vision of her lying in the stasis array had felt like a perfect mirror of the blood-drenched lotus he'd witnessed during his Tao vision. The two visions had merged into the fragment of the coffin, and the recent events were a continuation of that reality. Zack couldn't exactly pinpoint what concept was added to the Tao fragment, but he slowly started to form an idea. He had long since started to walk the path of life and death, but only the seed of trees had properly incorporated this concept so far. The seed of rot was clearly death attuned, but that seed was mostly propped up by fortuitous encounters. The concept he had incorporated into the fragment of the coffin was one he already had brushed upon before. Life through death. There were some differences, though. The insight related to trees was more akin to how a seed would grow from the ashes of a burned-down forest, gaining life through death. However, the insight he gained now was based on embracing death for a shot at life. He knew that he essentially had killed Alea when he turned her into a spirit tool. Even if her consciousness awoke again, she wouldn't be living. But Alea dying was the only way for her to live. The insight contained the willingness to go against the natural order, whereas the earlier insight was based on making the most of the natural order. They were the same, but also the opposite. Zack felt it was an extremely important step in the creation he was building for himself, a realignment of his Tao so that it would better fit as one half of the whole.
Getting a second middle-grade fragment would no doubt improve his choices upon evolving as well. But for now, he focused on the gained attributes. The improved attributes weren't too surprising, apart from the boost to endurance being slightly smaller than expected. That was the best-case scenario, though. He had reached a terrifying 1,692 endurance in his human form after the latest upgrade, and while he still was some ways from the attribute cap of 2,500, he still needed to be careful. A few more titles and another Tao upgrade, and he might hit the ceiling. He had only lost 3 points in strength from reaching the limit of the F grade, but a loss at this stage could be huge in case there were complications for him to upgrade his race to D grade. There wasn't cause to worry just yet, though, and Zack refocused on Love's Bond. He already knew that there were also actually 2 skills in the Spirit II already to match the 2 fractals on the handle of Varun's Bite, but he wouldn't use them now, as they had pretty big cooldowns. A long cooldown was fine with Zack, since that meant that the skills were a lot stronger than normal. It was just like how his ultimate skills, except Vanguard of Undeath, couldn't be used over and over. All in all, he felt that his new spirit tool was even better than expected. The more he thought about it, the more he felt it would be extremely easy to incorporate Love's Bond into his fighting style without it affecting the fighting style he had come up with for himself. It almost symbolized his whole creation, in a sense. It was an extremely good fit with most of his skills in his Undying Bulwark class, while also adding something new to the table. It perfectly mirrored his fragment of the coffin as well, and he would perhaps be able to move them both toward the Tao of Death over time. But the spirit tool also represented life and rebirth through Alea's soul and the purpose of its creation. If things progressed as he hoped, he would be able to turn death into life and give Alea back her life again. He could even think of some interesting possibilities with the sparks he could create with the help of the remnants. Getting them under control was a long-term plan, but perhaps he would be able to use the chains as a delivery method in the future. In the final attack against the dragon, he had used creation energy to form a spear to house the spark, but perhaps he could simply put the sparks into the coffin and shoot them out with a chain. He could only imagine the destructive potential of a Neprosium chain infused with the purest destruction. He wouldn't need to force it or change himself to adapt to the shield, and the system had upheld its end of the bargain and created a spirit tool suited just for him. The process had even given him a second mid-tier fragment, which might allow him to get a fitting arcane class. After having upgraded a second fragment, he couldn't help but start to fantasize about what options he might see when touching the Nexus node this time. With his previous usage of Hatchet Man's Rage leaving him in a weakened state, Zack spent another hour resting up before heading to the Nexus node. He had gotten mostly better during his talk with Cathaya, but he wanted to be completely rid of any lingering threats to his evolution before taking that step. He already had the ticking time bombs in his head to worry about. Truthfully, the undead incursion wasn't the only reason why he wanted to evolve as quickly as possible. There were 2 more reasons. The first was the 2 remnants in his mind. He knew there was a tribulation waiting for him when evolving. It was the final test before reaching E grade, and he would normally be completely confident in passing. However, the 2 remnants in his mind had already proven extremely adept at causing chaos at the most inopportune times, and Zack was afraid that they would flare up during the tribulation. It was better to smoothly evolve into E grade now, while the remnants were still drained and in an inactive state. The second was that he was getting dangerously close to the limit of how many attributes he could have. With the fragment of the coffin having evolved just now, his wiggle room was becoming limited. There was also probably a title waiting for reaching E grade first on the planet. And then there was potentially something for surviving the integration, closing the most incursions, and becoming the world leader, and so on.
There were potentially a lot of titles waiting for the moment he managed to close the final incursions, and he wanted to have the ability to enjoy the bonuses. His plan was to immediately eat the Fruit of Rebirth and the two race-boosting pills he'd gotten in the base town while flying toward the core of the Dead Zone. It might not be enough to completely pass into D-grade race, but it would at least set up the foundations and both increase his longevity and unlock some of the attribute cap of having a D-grade race. Zack finally felt he had both figured out what he needed to do and calmed his mind, and the next thing was simply for him to evolve so that he could set out toward the undead incursion. He walked over to the Nexus house and found that Kenzie was still installing the Heaven's Secrets Array he'd bought during an auction in Basetown. "How are things?" Zack asked when he arrived, nodding at Agros, who stood to the side as well.
"I'll have this array installed in half an hour," Kenzie answered as she blew a wisp of hair away from her face. "Are you okay?"
"I'm fine. I'll be able to get a breather when the undead are dealt with," Zack sighed.
"Have you decided what to do to get to the mainland?" Agros asked.
"If we haven't managed to stop the disruption by the point I'm ready to leave, then I'll risk it and use Kenzie's stabilization array. The area that was jammed by the undead the last time was enormous, and I'm afraid that going to Cogstown will just be a waste of time," Zack said.
"Fair enough," Agros shrugged.
"I'll get Calrin's uncle to help me set it up," Kenzie said. "He's pretty skilled with arrays, but he can only help with things that we buy through Thayer Consortium. Something to do with the limitations of the mercantile license."
"That little blue bastard should be thankful that we don't throw him into a spatial tear to search for a safe passage for us," Agros muttered from the side.
Zack snorted and was inclined to agree. The Sky Gnome's small act of giving him a protective ring had caused a ripple effect of almost incomprehensible proportions. It had led to the Zithia Pillhouse blowing up and him gaining infamy through slaughtering over 100 scions of the Zekia sector. Who knew what trouble waited for him when venturing into the vaster stage of the sector? However, the demon's words also made him think of something else, and he turned to Agros.
"Can you have the Sky Gnome and his appraisers come over?" Zack asked. "We need to make a preliminary tally of the gains. I want to see if there's anything useful we can bring to the Dead Zone."
"Sure," Agros said with some excitement as he flickered away.
Zack turned to his sister and handed her his cosmos sack. His most important treasures had already been moved over to his new spatial ring after it was confirmed that it didn't disappear. Most of the stuff he didn't have any direct use for had been thrown into the cosmos sack to be either appraised or added to the merit store.
"I'll go talk with Brasla for a bit," Zack said.
"Is this about Alea?"
Kenzie asked as her eyes darted to the necklace around Zack's neck.
"Agros told me what happened."
"I was too late again," Zack sighed. "This was the only thing I could think of."
Kenzie silently looked at her brother, but her eyes spoke volumes.
I just couldn't sit and watch her die."
Zack coughed, dodging the meaning of the stare. He truthfully wasn't sure how he felt about the demoness even now. He had thought about her a lot during the climb, and seeing those snippets of Alea's memories had rekindled the memories of those months they had spent almost attached at the hip after he'd closed the demon incursion. They had gone through ups and downs together, and he knew her even more intimately than Agros, in a sense. If this had been before the integration, he would no doubt have believed it was love. But the past year had numbed him, made him almost unable to think about anything except getting stronger. First it was to find his family, then it was to save Earth. He had never stopped to consider things such as love, especially not after Hannah's betrayal. But all of that was moot now that she was a coffin.
"So, you think you can bring her back in the future?"
Kenzie asked instead, after seeing her brother's brooding silence.
"That's what I hope.
I'll go talk with Brasla. He might know more, Zack said with a pained face. Provided he's in a talkative mood today.
Say hello from me. It's been a while since I've had time to visit him. This thing will be up and running when you're back, Kenzie said as she turned back to keep working on the Heaven's Secrets Array. Zack smiled as he flashed away with Loamwalker, and he found himself in front of the towers of Myriad Dao in a few seconds. His Dao repository had always looked gaudy, but now that he had witnessed the awe-inspiring Tower of Eternity and its mysterious apparitions, it looked even worse. The lights were blinding but hollow, completely lacking the mysteries of the universe. Zack kept his opinions to himself, though, as he walked inside the repository with a staid expression.
So, you survived after all, the ever-annoying voice drifted over as Brasla descended from a golden light appearing out of nowhere.
The tool spirit was decked in golden armor, with multiple golden and gem-studded swords attached to his back. Zack wasn't sure, but he guessed that he was copying the creator of the Blademaster inheritance this time, perhaps inspired by the war outside.
I thought more capable owners had descended on the island for a moment, but I guess the great Brasla has to make do with you for a while longer,
Brasla added as he threw Zack a scathing glance as he conjured his throne.
I'll try to live up to your expectations, Zack sighed. My sister sends her regards.
Brasla
said, but he suddenly froze as he stared at the necklace around Zack's neck.
What's that?
Chapter 68 Invitations.
This craftsmanship, Brasla muttered with glowing eyes as he teleported closer. It almost matches that of the great Brasla himself. But why does it have a false spirit within?
That's what I came to talk to you about. One of my people was dying, and her soul was crumbling. The only thing I could think of was to use a divine investiture array to lock her soul in a spirit tool in hopes of saving her life.
Using the holy array for such a purpose, Brasla muttered. Sacrilege. My creator would have turned you into blood mist if he heard about you wasting such a chance on something so frivolous.
I was out of options and got desperate, Zack admitted. I came to ask you, do you know if I can bring her back?
Bring her back?
Brasla asked as he looked at Zack like he was an idiot.
Why would you want to do that? As long as the girl's spirit heals, she can become a true spirit. You will have to break some rules to upgrade her, but you already seem all too willing to dabble in the taboo.
What do you mean? Zack asked.
This thing will not be able to improve the normal way. You need to find creative solutions to upgrade it. Solutions that the heavens won't be too happy about,
the tool spirit said, clearly taking pleasure in Zack's misfortune.
Why would I need to upgrade the spirit tool, though? Zack asked. I just want to return her to life.
Upgrading a weapon will upgrade the spirituality residing within. Just look at the dumb mutt inside your axe. You will need to upgrade this thing if you want to heal the girl,
Brasla said. Zack frowned when he heard the news. This was clearly bad. He had never had any desire to go against the system by becoming an unorthodox cultivator, but it was exactly what he needed to do to upgrade Love's bond, from the sound of it. Even weirder, it almost felt like the system was pushing him in that direction, as it was the system that had given him the array. Just what was it planning? Was this another type of trial it wanted to have him survive? If he stepped on the unorthodox path, he would be turned into a pariah like the technocrats, and people might get quests to kill him just by coming close to him. Or was the system planning something else entirely? Something related to the Terminus? But first of all, Zack needed to know if there even was a point to going down that road.
If I make her a new body, can I put her soul into it and give her back her life?
Zack asked.
No idea, Brasla shrugged with disinterest. Seems pretty stupid.
Haven't you ever hoped to become living? To become able to cultivate just like your creator?
Zack probed, hoping to elicit some response.
Why would the great Brasla ever want to become a flesh bag cursed by mortality? I am perfection, unsullied by time, and I will walk these halls long after both you and your planet have turned to dust. I might not be able to cultivate, but I am eternal.
The Tool's spirit harangued, and shining lights started appearing all around him like he was a god's avatar or something.
But do you know if it's possible? Someone as knowledgeable as you must surely have figured some things out,
Zack entreated.
My creator once mentioned that spirituals can reach a sublime state where they are virtually indistinguishable from cultivators, but he had never seen it himself. Of course, the great Brasla wouldn't degrade himself to the point of being mistaken for a lowly human, but all things are possible,
the Tool spirit admitted.
Turning a false spirit back into someone living is probably possible.
So it's possible after all,
Zack sighed in relief.
It might be possible, but what you want to do is going against the natural order,
Brasla snorted.
It's akin to bringing back those from the dead. It might be achievable for the great characters of the multiverse, but what does that have to do with a piece of trash like you?
I'll work hard and get there sooner or later, Zack said. As long as it's possible, it'll be fine.
A derisive snort was all the Tool spirit deigned to respond with before he dissipated again. Zack felt as though a huge weight was lifted from his shoulders as he walked back toward the Nexus House. Brasla was obviously a bit fuzzy on the details, but it really seemed that returning Alea into a demon was within the realm of possibilities. That was all Zack could ask for right now. He knew the process would likely be a long and arduous one, but at least he knew he hadn't completely messed things up. The knowledge gave him a sense of purpose beyond saving Earth as well, but for now he needed to refocus on the task at hand. He needed to get his items appraised and deal with the realignment. The thought of his items suddenly reminded him of the two cosmos sacks he had stowed away just before leaving Basetown. They were from Layara and Pretty, and curiosity made him take a look before returning to his sister. The cosmos sack he got from Pretty Peak just contained 3 crystals and a teleportation token, but he was surprised to see that one of them was a skill crystal. He didn't immediately touch it, but rather turned his attention toward the middle crystal, which seemed to be a communication crystal. He infused some cosmic energy into it, and the next moment, the voice of Pretty Peak appeared in his mind.
I engraved this thing because some things should not be spoken aloud. You should not rely on the Heliophis clan dealing with the threat to your planet. There are some unsavory rumors about that clan among the top forces of the Zekia sector. Divination comes with a cost, one that few are willing to pay unless absolutely necessary. One cannot divulge heaven's secrets wantonly, but being able to glimpse the future is also an extremely addicting power, from what I have heard.
Zack suddenly remembered Lord 84th, who'd stopped Abbot Everlasting Peace from saying too much. The reincarnated Buddhist had said essentially the same thing. Did divination perhaps mess with the plans the system had set in motion across the multiverse? And was therefore punished? Or was it simply that such a heaven-defying ability couldn't be powered by something so basic as cosmic energy? Zack shook his head as he kept listening.
Many believe that the Heliophis clan is searching for means to avoid the side effects of divination and karmic manipulation.
They are already suspected to have been gravitating toward unorthodox means for tens of thousands of years. It's possible that Viridus is performing his mad experiments with the clan's tacit blessing, and that they even have covertly protected him from capture by manipulating events behind the curtain. I don't understand how Viridus has survived pursuit for so long otherwise. I bet they can't wait to find out what scheme that lunatic has concocted in case they can use it for themselves.
Zack sighed when he heard the explanation. Yet another method to deal with the threat of the Redeemer seemed to have been ruined then and there. It looked like hiding was his only option, but as long as he cut any karmic links in time, they were likely safe. After meeting Cathaya, he finally had a better grasp of just how a star sector was constituted. She had likened a star sector to a book where each page was a dimensional layer. A star sector was, in other words, not a coherent galaxy teeming with life, but rather parts of multiple planes stacked so close to each other that dimensional travel was possible. Not even singular forces were constrained to a single dimension. The Albright Empire was comprised of planets and continents across thousands, perhaps tens of thousands, of realities. Some planets in the Empire might actually exist in the same dimension, but so far away from each other that it was infinitely faster to use interdimensional travel rather than normal travel to go between the two planets. It was akin to wormhole technology that Zack had seen in science fiction movies, where space was somehow bent and twisted, and traveling out of the main dimension was like taking a shortcut compared to moving in a straight line. The whole thing was extremely confusing, but the biggest takeaway was the difficulty of finding one's way without a marker. The Redeemer was probably traveling toward Earth, or another seeded planet, at this very moment, but he needed to move through multiple dimensions to get there. As long as any karmic link was cut off before Viridus was within a few dimensional layers of Earth, then finding this place was almost impossible, especially while the system's shroud was still in effect. This was also why flying treasures that could travel between worlds were expensive to the point that even D-grade warriors were often confined to their own world, or at least their solar system. The vessels didn't only need to have the capability to fly through the vacuum of space, but they also needed the capabilities to push through dimensional layers. It was a bit uncomfortable to think about, but Zack's only recourse was to hide Earth so that Viridus fed on some other poor planets instead of Earth. He could only pray that the people of Barum would manage to take out all the remaining members of the Medine royals on their side, as no one deserved getting culled by a lunatic like the Redeemer. That would be the best-case scenario, where all the seed planets managed to hide from Viridus. He already looked as though he wasn't long for the world, and 100 years was a long time. Perhaps the issue would be dealt with by the time that Earth was properly integrated into the Zekia sector.
"I will contact the Heliophis clan for you," the message continued. "But you truly shouldn't expect much. You can still get in touch with me by visiting Jera at the Blossom Rose Sword School that's close to Trasteria, the city where the teleportation token leads. She is an elder there and a disciple of my father. Trasteria is located on the main continent of the Albright Empire, a vast place full of opportunities. You can simply use the token to move to a place with more opportunities if you want. But you should know that your situation is precarious. Standing out too much without backing can cause an endless amount of trouble to arrive at your doorstep. The universe is full of lunatics, ready to risk everything to progress one step further on the road of cultivation, and some might believe you might be the key for them to take that step. I hope you will be able to survive the following centuries. The Zekia sector needs a beacon."
The second information crystal was a comprehensive introduction packet of the Albright Empire, its forces, and even some mystic realms that provided good limited titles. There were also a couple of identities that Zack could freely assume with the help of the attached skill, which was of the shape-shifting variety.
It was like he was about to enter the witness protection program or something. The skill was called shared identity, and it worked a bit differently compared to Thousand Faces. The skill he got from Pretty seemed to be able to create a greater transformation, where even one's aura could be changed by a certain degree. But it came with only 3 preloaded identities. He could essentially take one of these 3 shared identities, but he wouldn't be able to change his face as he wished, like he could with Thousand Faces. Zack held off on learning the skill for now, but it wasn't impossible he'd use it in the future. It would be pretty convenient to step into the shoes of someone with a proper background, but he didn't know if there were hidden strings attached to taking the name of one of these 3 men. Zack turned his attention to the second Cosmos sack next, but his expression froze when he noticed its contents. There were only 2 things inside, a short note and a frilly piece of fabric.
"A small greeting gift to remember me by. I am not allowed to hand out teleportation tokens to the Void Gate, but I would be happy to entertain you if you have the opportunity to stop by. We can talk about fashion and our futures under the light of the Void Star. Layara."
Zack blankly looked at the note, his mind unable to compute what was going on. The strained smile of Layara suddenly flashed by in his mind before he remembered the apologetic face of Galau. Just what had the merchant divulged during their meeting? Would he be known as some sort of deviant in the whole sector because of that one level in the tower? A sigh escaped from his mouth as he stowed away the Cosmos sack, unsure what to do with the treasure. He could only reluctantly put it into his spatial ring, as it would be weird throwing it out in the middle of his forest. However, things didn't get much better when he returned to the Nexus house, where Kenzie stood next to a rack of exquisite dresses, while 3 sky gnomes eagerly went through the mound of treasure.
"Why are there so many dresses in your sack?" Kenzie asked with a weird smile when she noticed his return.
"I was about to ask," the demon laughed from the side. "I thought I absconded with the most treasures back then, but I see that I still have much to learn."
"Are you planning on wooing someone? Is it Thea?"
Kenzie asked before she shot him a hesitant look.
"Or, don't tell me."
"Don't be silly," Zack sighed. "The 7th floor had me fighting actual scions from other parts of the multiverse. I looted my new ring and those dresses from a girl who targeted me."
"Do you think any trouble from that will lead back to Earth?"
Agros asked with a frown.
"I doubt it," Zack said hesitantly. "It kinda looked like my human side was killed by the girl I looted, and she was killed by someone else in turn. I fought the rest of the battle in my Draugr form. I don't think the system would allow problems to follow you back home, right? Perhaps it's possible to do something to cleanse the items, if needed?"
However, he honestly wasn't as sure as he let on. Chapter 69 Choices. He had already noticed it back during his meeting with Cathaya, but there was something wrong with his chest. Iztane had left a burn on his body that he hadn't been able to get rid of with healing pills. However, getting his torso blown apart and reformed by creation energy had dealt with that problem. Or so he thought. He still couldn't see any mark on his body, but he had felt a slight pain in his chest multiple times now. But the feeling was gone before he had a chance to react, making him almost doubt it was ever there. He couldn't see anything amiss, but the Fire Mage had seemed to come from a real powerful force. She might have all kinds of means of tracking he had no idea about.
"The Thayer Consortium happens to be skilled in those kinds of endeavors. We'll happily help in this regard. For a small remuneration,"
Calren said as he gave a prim bow.
"Young lord, it is good to see you again."
Zack didn't immediately greet the wily merchant,
but he rather gazed at the Sky Gnome for a few seconds as his thumb rubbed the defensive treasure that he'd received from Calrin before he left for the tower.
"Did you know that the ring you gave me would cause trouble with the Tsarun clan?"
Zack asked while he tried to gauge the slippery merchant's face for any lies.
"No way,"
Calrin said, looking genuinely shocked.
"It is just a defensive treasure that has been kept in my family. I just wanted to make sure that you, my great benefactor, wouldn't meet any untoward end during your first sojourn into the cultivator world."
"Well, your small gift led to the destruction of the Zathia pill house and the death of almost 100 elites of the sector, including a Dravorak princeling,"
the demon snorted from the side.
"Oh, and a main branch Tsarun scion, along with all their members at the base town. Thayer Consortium might become famous across the whole sector over the following years as the rumors spread."
"It... Dravorak? As in the Dravorak dynasty?"
the Sky Gnome said, his face aghast.
"Did they see the signet as well? I mean, it wasn't my intention to cause any trouble. I don't understand what's going on."
"Just what happened during your climb?"
Kenzie exclaimed with shock from the side, after glaring at the Sky Gnome, who quickly busied himself with the pile of treasures by the side.
"It's complicated," Zack sighed. "I got spotted by one of Calrin's old enemies, but the problem was that I didn't handle it well. Things got a bit out of control from there, and a bunch of people tried to kill me, but it was mostly sorted out."
"Sorted out?"
Agras snorted from the side, but he didn't add any more oil to the fire after a glare from Zack.
"Well, we also learned a few things about the origins of the Redeemer. For now, make sure that no one in Port Atwood mentions where they come from if they decide to head to the Tower of Eternity. My identity might be a bit delicate,"
Zack said after some thought as he turned to Kenzie.
"If I may, young master," Calrin said from the side. "What level did you reach?"
73rd level. The entrance of the 9th floor," Zack said, not bothering to hide the truth.
9th floor!"
Calrin screamed while the appraisers looked up from the pile of treasures for the first time, shock clearly written all over their faces.
"Monster! True monster!"
the Sky Gnome muttered before his face lit up again.
"But that's for the best. With you as a guardian, the Thayer Consortium will reach unprecedented heights. I, Calrin Thayer, will not only have led my family out of a calamity, but toward the heavens themselves."
"What are you getting so big-headed for, you little bastard?"
Agras snorted from the side.
"You'd better think of new ways to provide benefits to your shareholders instead. A big tree might give you shade, but it also requires a lot of nutrients."
Zack slightly smiled at the antics, but he didn't correct the demon. He still couldn't tell if the Sky Gnome had exposed his connection to the Thayer Consortium on purpose or not. But it had caused heaps of trouble regardless. The little merchant would have to work extra hard to make up for the chaos he had caused. But he knew that he would have to rely on the Sky Gnome to a certain degree after meeting Kathea. He'd had no idea that elites required more energy to level up compared to weaker cultivators, which honestly made him worry about his own situation a bit. Not only were his attributes almost 10 times higher compared to a normal cultivator, but he also had high efficiency on the attributes. Add to that that he had a second class to level, and the even more troubling issue of him being immortal. All that combined made for an extremely torturous leveling experience that would require terrifying amounts of bloodshed and treasures to reach the peak of E-grade. As for the grades above that, he didn't even dare think about it.
"How long until you've gone through everything?"
Zack asked instead as he turned to Calrin.
"We'll have a preliminary answer for you in 2 hours," Calrin hurriedly said. "You can focus on your cultivation with ease."
Zack nodded before he turned to Agras. So, do you have any advice? The information crystals I have only mentioned the three tribulations, Zack asked. Heart, body, and soul. It said that using treasures to pass is impossible, and that you have to rely on your own prowess. Then it just went on to say that one should have an elder nearby in case of a mishap.
The information crystal was something he had bought in Basetown during the first week he stayed there. He had bought a bunch of general information crystals that contained all sorts of things that were good to know. Most of it was things that any teenager belonging to a cultivation force would know, which was why they cost almost nothing. However, that also meant that they didn't delve too deep into any topics, only giving an overview. Buying the crystals had been the first step toward self-reliance for the humans of Port Atwood. It wasn't that he didn't trust Agros's or Alan's teachings, but their worldview and knowledge were influenced by growing up in Clan Ajrezak. What worked there wasn't necessarily optimal for Port Atwood, so it didn't hurt to get another source of knowledge. It wasn't anywhere near as comprehensive as Thea's library, but it was a start.
It differs, Agras said as he looked at the Nexus node while Kenzie was putting the finishing touches to the support array. It tests you in one of three ways, depending on where the ruthless heavens feels you are lacking. The tribulation will strike at your weakness, and either you pass or you fail.
What happens if you fail? Zack asked.
Anything from mild wounds to death, depending on how badly you performed, and whether someone could disperse the tribulation for you.
The demon shrugged.
But truthfully, I've only met one who failed this trial so badly he was forced to give up on cultivation. Oberak, a guard on my home. He undertook the trial drunk out of his mind. It ended with him going insane.
Insane? Just what did he encounter? Zack asked with a frown.
The body tribulation is essentially the ruthless heavens beating you up, and you just have to bear it. It is to test that you have created a foundation sturdy enough to keep building upon. I doubt you'd get that one, considering your monstrous constitution, the demon said with an envious glance. It is the most common trial for dexterity and intelligence-based classes.
And then? Zack urged.
Next, there is the spirit tribulation, the demon continued. Your soul is attacked in a way that neither skills nor items can protect you from. You need to use your soul and Tao to defend yourself. The soul is the connection to the heavens, and it needs to be strong enough to withstand the weight of the Tao, Agras said.
Zack grimaced as he heard the description. His soul was already in a pretty fragile state after having been forcibly torn apart and mended twice in the past month. It was a patchwork upon a patchwork, where the slightest thing might set off a chain reaction beyond his control. However, his soul had become pretty sturdy from the series of harrowing experiences, so he still felt some confidence in case he got that one, at least while the remnants stayed inactive.
Finally, there is the heart tribulation. You will be thrown into illusions and temptations, and you will need to break free. The heavens test your conviction and mental fortitude. A sturdy body and soul is needed to walk the path of cultivation, but a resolute heart might be even more important, the demon continued. This is the trial that turned Oberak into a simpleton, by the way.
Zack slowly nodded as he listened to the options. The third one didn't feel too difficult, either. His mental state should be a lot sturdier compared to most peak F-grade warriors after his countless life-and-death battles. Many cultivators who had reached this point had never even left their own clan's estates, and this kind of trial might be pretty difficult for that kind of greenhouse warrior. Still, it was a relief that the risk of death or crippling was pretty low. He could still fail, but he would at least be able to heal up and fight the undead empire in his current condition.
Is it the same for all the rarities,
Or are there more things to be wary of when taking epic classes or higher? Zack asked.
Perhaps epic and higher have different trials apart from the normal three. I wouldn't know, the demon slowly said. But they will no doubt be more dangerous. Each increase in rarity means a sharp increase in difficulty that accompanies the tribulation.
Zack looked at the crystal with mixed emotions. He wasn't sure if he was ready. He wanted to consolidate his gains and stabilize his foundations before attempting this, but time waited for no man, and he couldn't hold off any longer. Hearing about the losses out on the ocean and seeing the scorched landscape outside his home had been a stark reminder that every day he spent accumulating his strength was another day of disastrous losses across the world. Perhaps he would be able to enter the heart of the Dead Zone and take out the Lich King without evolving. But perhaps he wouldn't. With the situation looking like it did, there would be no second chances or do-overs. If his assault failed, or even got slightly delayed, the whole world would fall. He could not have that on his conscience.
It's done, Kenzie said as she looked up with a tired grin.
Thank you. Try to rest up. Zack smiled, a pang of guilt blossoming in his heart again. He had heard from Agras just how hard she had fought to keep things together while he was gone, and her unstable aura clearly indicated that her soul was overtaxed. He had already learned from Jowl that using high-tech was draining on the soul, and Jeeves was no doubt as high-tech as they came.
Here, take these with you as well. Zack said as he took out a stack of soul crystals. They'll help restore your mental energy.
Where did you get those?
Agras said with wide eyes, his hand already reaching out to snatch one from Kenzie.
Here, take this,
Zack snorted, and took out a few more after he slapped away the demon's hand.
I got these soul crystals from the mentalist cultivator on the 7th floor as well.
It's called a soul crystal?
Agras asked curiously as he tried absorbing it.
No idea. That's just what I called it, Zack shrugged. They didn't have these things on your home planet?
I don't think I've ever heard of crystals like this in our sector at all,
Agras muttered with a frown.
Perhaps our sector simply doesn't produce them. Trade between sectors is pretty difficult from what I've heard, and only the top people do it. Nobodies like us will have to make do with local products.
So I won't be able to restock on these things?
Zack muttered with disappointment. He had thought that might be a real possibility after not having seen a single soul crystal during his time in the base town, but he had held on to some small hope that was because he'd only been there for less than 2 weeks. But judging by the demon's reaction, he wasn't so lucky. He suddenly regretted using soul crystals like candy during his climb, but he also knew that they had played a large part in him managing to break through the 8th floor. But he would have to be more careful about any expenditure going forward, which was fine now that the two primordial remnants were restraining each other. With the array installed, Zack couldn't wait any longer, and he walked over to the large crystal with brisk steps, anticipation making his heart pound. The moment Zack touched the Nexus node to initiate the upgrade, a screen appeared in front of him. But it was vastly different compared to the sparse rows of information he had seen the last time. He almost completely forgot his surroundings as he eagerly read the boxes.
Free attributes gained per level, 10. Base attributes gained per node, 76 to 100. Common, uncommon, base attributes +6. Rare, epic, base attributes +7. Arcane, base attributes +8. Base attributes gained per node, 101 to 125. Common, uncommon, base attributes +14. Rare, epic, base attributes +16. Arcane, base attributes +18. Base attributes gained per node, 126 to 150. Common, uncommon, base attributes +22. Rare, epic, base attributes +25. Arcane. Base attributes, +28. Option 1. Name, Gatekeeper of Sukhavati. E, Epic. Divergence from Hatchetman. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Vitality, +10. Endurance, +10. Wisdom, +5. First skill gained, Chains of Samsara. Paradise is waiting, but only the worthy may step past your gates. Name, Undying Warlord. E, Epic. Divergence from Undying Bulwark. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +12. Endurance, +10. First skill gained, Profane Annihilation. Unstoppable, undeniable, unmatched. Option 2. Name, Vessel of Destruction. E, Arcane. Upgrade of Hatchetman. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +38. Agility, +5. Endurance, -10. First skill gained, Avatar of Wrath. Only through destruction can creation take place. Become the harbinger of a new era. Name, Nature's Lament. E, Epic. Divergence from Undying Bulwark. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Endurance, +10. Wisdom, +11. First skill gained, Touch of Anguish. Paradise is a lie, a putrid tomb of unimaginable horrors. Option 3. Name, Edge of Arcadia. E, Epic. Upgrade of Hatchetman. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +14. Vitality, +8. First skill gained, Rapturous Divide. Even paradise needs a butcher, an unrelenting storm of violence. Name, Fetters of Desolation. E, Epic. Divergence from Undying Bulwark. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +11. Endurance, +8. Wisdom, +5. First skill gained, Blighted Cut. Bind them to your calamity. Sever their path. Emerge alone. Option 4. Name, Gaia's Apostle. E, Epic. Upgrade of Hatchetman. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +5. Vitality, +12. Wisdom, +5. First skill gained, Gaia's Eruption. The Champion of Verdure, unmatched and unkillable. Name, Wall of Bones. E, Epic. Upgrade of Undying Bulwark. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Endurance, +18. Vitality, +5. First skill gained, Profane Phalanx. The living can only run in fear as the tide of bones moves forward. Option 5. Name, Warmaster of Hecate. E, Epic. Divergence of Hatchetman. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +15. Vitality, +7. First skill gained, Nature's Fall. Empowered by the sacred Yu, the Warmaster becomes Death Incarnate. Name, Risen Asura. E, Epic. Divergence of Undying Bulwark. Attribute per level, ×1, ×2, ×3. Strength, +12. Endurance, +11. First skill gained, Winds of War. Not even death can chain down your furor.
Chapter 70. Decision. Zack looked at the options with mixed emotions. He had succeeded in the sense that there actually was an arcane class available, a class called Vessel of Destruction. However, it didn't have another arcane to accompany it. It was instead matched with an epic class called Nature's Lament. He had been hesitant about what he should do after hearing Cathaya's description, and this only muddied the waters further. With arcane classes locking in your future path, there was a real risk that picking just one arcane class while leaving the other at epic might have some unanticipated ramifications.
If there had been a set of 2 arcane classes, he might just have ignored Cathaya's warning and followed Iriel's advice to shoot for the stars. But now he wasn't so sure. His instincts told him that he needed to create a functioning system between his 2 classes, where both sides moved toward a common goal. He had felt there were some compatibility issues with his 2nd class for some time now, and there was a real risk that his Draugr side might turn into a bottleneck if he wasn't careful. Zack slowly read the description of Vessel of Destruction. It felt most likely that it was based around the Splinter. It seemed to utilize the rage and madness that the Splinter radiated, and the class would perhaps even help him in harnessing the bronze sparks. It also provided a skill called Avatar of Wrath, which sounded like some sort of boosting skill in the vein of Hatchet Man's Rage, or perhaps something more akin to Vanguard of Undeath. However, nothing indicated that it also incorporated the Shard or the balance between the 2 forces, and neither was there any such indication on the accompanying class. It wasn't surprising, though, as there simply hadn't been enough time for him to get acquainted with the Pink Flashes and the Shard of Creation. He'd only had access to it during the frantic escape from the technocrat vessel and the subsequent battle against the dragon. That was nothing compared to the months of carrying the Splinter and the weeks of constant experimentation with the bronze flashes. The Tao requirements had been fulfilled after reaching middle mastery with the Tao of the Coffin, and there was no doubt in his mind that he had gone far beyond what was required to generate enough merit for a 2nd arcane option. He had conquered the 8th floor of the Tower of Eternity. He had taken down a literal dragon before forcing the elites of the whole sector to give in. He had taken out a whole technocrat vessel, and he had closed almost all the incursions of a newly integrated world. He had even witnessed the Terminus, the origin and the end of the Tao itself. If he didn't have enough achievements by now, then who did? That meant there was a problem with his creation. There was a fuzzy image of his future cultivation in his mind, one based on a few defining features of his power. It was a path of duality, exemplified through his 2 classes, his opposing Taos, and the 2 remnants in his mind. But there was still nothing that really tied these 3 pairs together. He also had no actual idea what the bronze and pink flashes he created were, or even how he was supposed to properly use them. He knew that there was no way for him to gain a quick fix to upgrade Nature's Lament to an arcane option, so he could only drop the issue.